And start the tape at this point. And I would say that my name is Dan Mason, and I am an artist in residence at Holden Village this week. And this talk is entitled Recent Paintings and Prints, and, which makes it sound like an exhibit. It's a typical name or title you would give to an exhibit in a gallery. And it is really because the slides which I happen to have along here this week are the most recent things from the last year and a half or so. So that's the way it works out. But I'd also like to spend a couple minutes before going through the slides to talk about my values in terms of making art and how I got to this point, how I got to be an artist and why, and put the art in context that way. I guess that I began to be interested in art when I was probably in junior high and discovered that it was fun making visual images. And the first things that I did really were to kind of celebrate things which I liked. I would make paintings of our cabin that our family had at a lake, and pictures like that, kind of souvenir art in a way. A sort of celebration of those things. And it was really fun to do it, to make these little paintings. They tended to be about 8 by 10 inches and of places we knew real well. And that was a fun thing for me to do. I went to college at St. Olaf College in Northfield, Minnesota. And at that point, I was an art major, but my debate was, should I be an architect or should I be an artist? And I had developed a strong interest in architecture, and that was enhanced by the teaching at St. Olaf. But I ended up going to graduate school to study art, to become a painter. But there were important things that happened at St. Olaf, and I think there were values that were taught there, or that I was able to gain from that experience that led me to become an artist. And might explain why a person is an artist, or at least why I am. The idea that came to me really the first time there was that art has always reflected the most important values and attitudes and technologies of the times in which the art has been made. We look back through history and study the history of humankind. Very often we do that in large part by looking at the art and the building, the music, the literature. It is a good way that historians and people have found to understand a time. And this fact that artists reflect their times was real important to me. I feel that artists can't help but do that. They're powerless to do anything else. However they might feel they might be rebelling against their times, that very rebellion is very likely related to the times in which they're living. And so as we look at art of the 20th century, art of our own day, I think it helps us understand it, to keep that in mind. This has been a century of tremendous change, in which the pace of change has accelerated so rapidly and continues to accelerate without any seeming sign of lessening. And so it follows then that art is going to change greatly too. So in the modern era, art has become controversial in ways that it never was before. It's become controversial because it reflects change. It seems unfamiliar because of that change. And I think it helps us. We may not like what we see at all times when we look at contemporary art, but I think it helps us if we realize that that is a reflection of our times in one way or another. And it can help us understand who we are too. So that was an idea that came to me in college, and the second value was that it was making art was a very important thing to do. Because of that first idea. Because by making art, if one works diligently and honestly at it, you can find yourself, or identify yourself along that long tradition of those who have reflected their society in the best ways and the clearest ways that they can. Then I went to graduate school at the University of Iowa, and here things changed a bit. The focus became very much more intense. Values learned there partly had a lot to do with discipline, of really focusing one's energies and work and pushing oneself as far as one possibly could, and continually wanting to try to go further and develop one's work further. I was able during those years to be associated with a professor who was very influential to me. His name is Joseph Patrick, and he was a professor of drawing. And I think what I learned from him had a lot to do with drawing, but also he modeled a way to be a teacher, which I took on and tried to follow when I became a teacher. And one of the important elements of that, or the key elements of that, was that to be an effective teacher, the teacher must not only be concerned about the artist or the student's development as an artist, but as a person. He was a kind of rare professor who took tremendous interest in each person who would come through his classes and follow them very carefully. I studied drawing at the University of Iowa, and primarily the human figure. I got an MA and MFA in drawing, kind of an old-fashioned traditional way of studying art, is to concentrate on drawing, and that I found that to be what was exciting to me at that time. And I did very little painting, although that was part of what I was studying. The main thing was drawing and the human figure. And I think at this time I began to understand or realize that for me, it was important to create art that took one step or maybe a few steps away from surface reality. That it became less appealing, less satisfying, less important to simply copy what I could see if I looked at something. But to try to find something in that subject that was very important. Now, my primary subject at that time was the human figure, and almost exclusively the human figure. And so, to explain what I mean, it's easy to illustrate that with the figure as a subject. If I was drawing a model on the model stand, I looked very hard at that model to try to understand the form as fully as I could. But I didn't want to make a drawing or picture of necessarily that specific person or that specific model, but more the idea or the symbol of the human figure, something a little more universal. Looking at my drawings, I'm sure people could identify the specific models because I look very hard. There's a combination of looking very hard at the form that you're drawing, but trying not to get hung up and caught up in the surface details, but try to describe things in a more universal way. And I'll be talking more about that value as we look at the paintings. After graduate school, I taught at Bethany College in Lindsberg, Kansas for 12 years and taught primarily drawing and then other things and was chair of the art department there. And that was a wonderful experience working with students who were very responsive in a really well-equipped department within the context of a very small college, a college of about 750 students in central Kansas. And that was a real good time period. But it was a time period in which I found my energies primarily going towards teaching, and the affairs of the department, and so that I felt a growing conflict within myself that I was not able to ever really know what I could do as an artist, because I just didn't get enough time. I would draw regularly, but I couldn't feel that I was throwing my energies towards that. So eventually, I decided to leave Bethany, and my wife also at that time wanted a career change, and we came back to Minnesota where she entered school, and I began to work full-time as an artist, making paintings and eventually prints, and becoming involved with the gallery world. And simultaneously with that, taking care of our two children who are quite young at that time. They're our younger child, they're in the balcony now, but our younger child at that point was 6 months old when we made our move back to Minnesota. So I began to work on my own with a studio in the Twin Cities, and became associated with a gallery there called Thomas Berry Fine Arts, and entered a whole different world. When I'd been in the academic world, either as a student or a teacher, that was different. There's a different world in relation to the arts than the world of galleries, where the expectation is that once in a while a painting will sell. While I was a teacher, I seemed to value so much everything I did, I never wanted to part with anything. And it didn't take long at all to have my attitude change to the one that I was very happy to see anything go out the door, because that is the that's the source of earned income. I found that, well, I was very fortunate to be associated with a really excellent gallery and excellent gallery director. My goal is to produce art that is in the fine art realm. It's not commercial art. It's not art which necessarily has broad appeal. But I'm trying to do what I referred to at the beginning, explore ideas and visual ideas and other ideas, and see where that goes. The gallery director supports that with his artists. There are 18 artists that are associated in a regular way with that gallery. And it's difficult for an artist to do that. It's difficult for a gallery to do that. But that is a commitment that we each have made, the artists in that gallery, the director as well. And I found that association is very helpful to the production of work. That there are ways that the gallery can arrange to make it possible for me to do more things than what I could do on my own. So what I do in Minneapolis is I have a studio in Northeast Minneapolis. I make paintings there. And a few times a year I stop and make prints. They may be monotypes like I'm doing, or similar to what I'm doing here. Or I may go to a place where there are artists who are printmakers. It's called Landmark Editions, where artists will come to them and together we'll make prints in a kind of collaboration way. And we'll talk about that with the slides. Okay, I made these notes while sitting on top of the Chalet 10 looking over the mountain. It was a very wonderful place to sit and make notes. But I have to, I'm just sort of filling here while I'm trying to read my writing here. Okay. The imagery that I developed after, you know, I told you that I'd drawn the human figure for years and years. But gradually that changed, and the imagery that developed about 10 or 12 years ago had to do with architecture. Again, my strong interest in architecture now being applied to painting. Architecture and landscape. And to describe them in a general way, I think I've been making architectural settings and landscape settings that are consciously out of the ordinary. That is, it's not what you see if you look out the window. Titles of my paintings would suggest that. There were many of the paintings had to do with temple sites or temple ruins, arboretums, sculpture garden, reflecting pool, things like this, where the architectural setting in a landscape is in some way special or unique or outside our daily routine experience. And I am not drawing and painting things that I see. If I want to create a city square scene like this, you can tell from this painting that's been in front of you for quite a while now that there's a great deal of simplification, a movement towards abstraction. Buildings very often do not have any openings. There's one opening in this building, but very often the architectural forms there will not have any sort of windows or doors. Another characteristic is of the work is the way the color is used. I've tended to use really strong saturated colors and tried to mix colors, that is, put colors next to each other that don't necessarily go together, but if I do it in the right way, then they will. Kind of experimental color. The way I tend to work is to, the first step with a painting is to lay a background color over the whole thing. And then paint into that, paint colors over it, or use a solvent and wipe areas away, but working with that background color. I'm working with oil paint on linen canvas, and I choose linen because it has wonderful texture of the weave. The weave of the canvas shows much more distinctly and with greater variety than with cotton. So that's the process, laying on colors and working back and forth. The paintings that and prints that I'll be showing you are date from 1988, as the these that you're looking at are the oldest things that you'll see. Another way these images depart from life is that there never are any people in these streets. There's no sense of human occupation that in a literal way, although in some they maybe seem to suggest that human activity, but I'm dealing with simple architectural forms and with perhaps an unusual accent like this. I like to put in things that are a little jarring or maybe a little difficult to explain. And while I think of this as a tree, of course there's no tree on earth that is quite like that, but that is how it functions for me. I've been talking a lot, and I've gotten through the basic philosophy section, and I want to look at slides now. I'd love to have you interrupt or if you have questions or comments, please do that at any point.
Dan, can I ask
mm-hmm.
a question?
Yeah.
On your linen, do you stretch your own canvas and then you gesso it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do a traditional preparation of stretching the canvas and then sizing it with rabbit skin glue, that is a hot animal hide glue that is painted over it to seal off the fibers from the oil that will come on later. And then two coatings of an oil ground. Not acrylic gesso, which is used quite often in painting these days, because acrylic gesso seems to have a way of sucking color out over time and dulling colors. So I try to do the old traditional process.
Mm-hmm. Possibly because we were told, but I think it would come to me that way anyway. I see that as being a spiritual light.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you say that. I appreciate that very much. Ultimately, that's how I hope to communicate, is in spiritual terms. And you'll see the work develop. I have a feeling that there is spiritual communication that is possible to achieve with forms that are somewhat abstract, that have some sense of mystery to them.
How large is this piece?
48 inches by 68.
So approximately the size that we see it by.
Yeah, it's probably just a little bit bigger than this. I feel comfortable working fairly large, or in that scale. Sometimes the forms are really become even more flat and more abstract and decorative. And I think I did this after a period of working in the print shop at Landmark Editions, because there's a lot of printmakings techniques, things that, like lines that show through from previous layers. Now, this is sort of maybe kind of a jarring image, but it chronologically it fits with those paintings that I just was showing you. This was a project. This is a project in which we made a woodcut at Landmark Editions that is 3 feet by 6 feet. I think it's maybe slightly larger than you see it on the screen. And I worked with the people at Landmark, and they said they thought I'd done a lot of monotypes, and they said it'd be a real good idea if I did a woodcut, they thought, because of the way my work looked with a lot of texture in it. And we made one mistake in our planning as we sat. We said, I asked them, how big could it possibly be and still fit on the press? You know, what's the maximum size? And that's how we ended up making this. And there are many times we wish that I hadn't asked that question in that way, because the size got to be a real, real problem. It's a woodcut, you know, you carve away plates. We call them plates, all they're wood. This is printed in 5 or 7 colors on 5 plates. So we have 5 3 by 6 foot pieces of plywood to carve. So it's a lot of carving, but once you start carving it, it also starts to warp. And there were tremendous technical problems with that had to be solved by the printmakers. I had the opportunity simply to stand by and shake my head or wring my hands or whatever, because the artist working with the printmakers does not have to solve those problems, does not have to figure it out. Shops like that exist to let people like myself, who is trained as a painter, come and make prints without having a tremendous knowledge of printmaking. But over the years I've picked up some. Well, I should jump back just for a second. This imagery was kind of like a mountain city. It combined a lot of elements of paintings, stepped walls. Well, it's a very bright painting, and it looks especially orange in this slide, and it isn't. It's pretty orange, but it's not that orange. This is a monotype done at Landmark Editions. We've been doing monotypes. Some of the people in this room have been doing that today. The difference with this is that we used a press, whereas over here we're either rubbing it or applying directly. And the idea here was, again, mountain setting with hill towns, cities, and city walls. And this is a painting from about the end of 1988, which was kind of a painting that helped me move on to some new kinds of imagery. And it's part of an arboretum series in which I'm making forms which I think of as trees, but they're also kind of like sculpture. And they're also kind of like figures. And my hope is that someday I can get back to working with the human figure. But I think it's going to have to be a fairly abstract figure. That is just the direction I want to be moving. This is a monotype. I have a few monotypes to show you. Using processes similar to the ones we're using here at Holden. This one I did up at the lake. When we go up to northern Minnesota, I bring along equipment similar to what I have here. And this is a print 22 inches by 30, which I did a couple years ago at the lake, the monotype process.
For those of us that haven't been to your monotype workshop, what surface are you spreading ink on?
I'm using plexiglass, clear acrylic, as the surface to receive the ink. And there's many ways of doing it, but the way that I did these was that I would ink up that surface and put the paper down and rub it, you know, and then peel it away. So I'd ink it up. Maybe this shape would be in, and maybe the waves that would be on one printing, and then just keep doing color after color. But it's a process of applying ink to a surface, then bringing paper down, rubbing it, and pulling it off. For the coals, this is, of course, Trout Lake, and that they're familiar with, looking across towards Whitefish Lake in the distance. We had the pleasure to run into friends from Minnesota here today, or this week, who live just very near to that the setting. I don't usually do things. I should back up and say that I have such an emotional attachment to this place that I actually did a scene that you could identify, perhaps, if you could look at a photograph. But I usually work more out of my head than that. This is another monotype done at the lake and in the woods, and it's intended to suggest the forest. And to me, that sort of abstraction means more to me than just than really carefully trying to paint trees and leaves. People can do that. I can probably do it technically, but it does not satisfy me. It ties the image down too specifically to one thing. And this seems to free the imagination a little more.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Does it involve snow, or is it just your way of making it abstract?
Oh, not snow. Are you referring to the white?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't thinking of it that way. Hand rubbing process does not, there's not a lot of pressure there, so there's a fair amount of white paper that often just will show through by printing out a press. Could probably eliminate that, but that texture is really just comes about
that
way.
I can see mm-hmm. that as being a small style.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so just wind blowing through the forest.
Mm-hmm.
Through
the trees. That's real nice, yeah.
And that's white on top of the beige.
Well, I didn't print any white. There's a white of the paper showing through where you see white. Then there's some kind of gray, and then I took rollers like we're using down there and drew these lines, and then all this is happening on plexiglass, and then take a palette knife and scrape away where you ever see these shapes, scrape away, and then print. And
how did you get the small white showing?
I mean, like little spots like this?
On the tree trunks farther down in the ray, where it looks mottled like marble.
Yeah. It's a combination of, you know, when you roll the ink out, it doesn't entirely cover. You know, there's a little texture that appears, and the soft pressure of your hand rubbing. It doesn't force the paper into the ink. So the paper has a texture to it, a little bit of tooth, so it you can't completely compress it when you rub it. It just sort of happens that way.
That particularly satisfying. Several people have several different interpretations on your painting. Is that what you aim for sometimes?
Well, I'm always thrilled if people have an interpretation and, you know, for the image to affect them enough that they see something in it. It may not be exactly what I saw. In fact, it's surprising. Sometimes I wish it would be more right on what I was thinking of. But the main thing is that I'm really pleased that they would see something in it.
And most artists try not to explain their paintings too much so that it suppresses the interpretation.
I think that just totally depends on, there's some artists who want you to know absolutely every little thing that they were thinking. I don't know. I like some ambiguity and mystery. And in doing that, I accept the fact that people will have a lot of different interpretations of it. This I saw as underwater, an underwater scene. Then to switch, there's three slides here of another group of monotypes that are printed maybe just a little bit smaller than the image. This is fancy printing in the print shop, doing things that I couldn't possibly do on my own in hand rubbing. We were able to spend a month in Hawaii, on the island of Maui, because my wife was working there, and I made this print within 48 hours, I think, of coming back, and it was pretty heavily influenced by the fact that we had been in Hawaii. The color, some of the imagery, the curvature of the earth, the ocean. And since we really enjoyed looking at sunsets, I decided that for once in my life I'll put a up and out blatant sunset into a painting. And that beautiful sunset where there's a gradation from very light to very dark, very rich colors from yellow through oranges to purples, is the result. Well, I wanted to do it that way, but I can't do that. The printer at Landmark did a brilliant job of making that happen, of laying out that kind of a blend. Rolling ink that is blended like that on a big roller that's about this big around in diameter, and you could lay flat blends that is straight across, but this had to curve. And so if you're using a roller, you know, one hand has to move faster than the other, part of the roller is going to move faster than the other. It's a very, very difficult technical thing to avoid getting uneven inking. So it's a real fun thing. But the printmakers mix the color and roll it out. This third one from the Hawaii series is based on a windsurf board, which I saw. It had a design kind of like that on it, of a serpent. And I saw it as kind of a serpent, but tried to make it a little more three-dimensional and kind of suggest an island or a group of islands. This painting was made for a specific show at the gallery a year ago now called Big Paintings. The idea was August is kind of a off month for galleries, and so the director thought it would be fun to have a show in which it was simply titled Big Paintings, and the artists in the gallery who were interested were challenged to make big paintings. And it turned out to be really one of the best shows in years, I think, in the Twin Cities. It was a very interesting show. This is the painting which I produced, which was, 6 feet by, 12? Wait a minute now. Yes, it's 12 feet long. And you get some sense of scale by looking at the doorway here. And this turned out to be one of the smaller paintings in the show. And it was real fun for me to work on something that large. The idea is the sculpture garden, a setting that isn't necessarily continuous, but things don't necessarily line up. Some things move from panel to panel here, but not necessarily. A reflecting pool and kind of abstract forms of sculpture and architecture. I had a show at the gallery in October. This is one of the paintings from that show. It takes me a while when I've had an experience to assimilate it and kind of bring it under control. And I think the paintings that I made for the show last November had a lot of Hawaii influence in them, but they're not nearly so blatant as that first effort. I found that the work that I did almost a year later had a lot of foliage in it. It seemed to be about growing things, less about architecture, more about hillsides. So that's one of the ways that the work develops, is there's a need to make paintings. And if I'm having a show, then I have to make paintings for that show. And the hardest part is that whenever I start painting after not having painted for a while, I cannot think of a single idea. And I feel that I will never have another idea again. And it's a real hard process. I usually make little drawings, tiny little drawings, on 3x5 cards, and do a lot of these until I think I maybe see something that I can work with. And it was out of that process that I began to develop kind of hillsides and trees and some sort of foliage that developed as a theme, and forms that were right along the center of the composition.
Would you pencil that out, or you would just start freehand?
To start the painting, painting like this one, what I usually do is I've got this little 3x5 card, and I look at it, but then take charcoal and do the basic outline drawing, and very often make a lot of changes. It's on the painted canvas, that is, the ground has been put down, like this had this kind of blue-green ground, and then that's what I draw on with the charcoal, and until I think it's right, and then I simply start working with the first color and then the next color. And I tend to paint reactively in terms of color. I put something down that reacts to the background, and once I put that color, then I look at that and figure out what the next color will be. So it's not all planned out in advance. But it's in a process that doesn't allow for a whole lot of change of the composition once you start it. This is part of a sculpture garden series. This red form is supposed to suggest a sculpture. I like to have textures and things show through the ground. I'm working, if you could see this in real life, you'd see there's the sort of stuff that's been painted over and coming through. And to me, that suggests the history of the image on this canvas. There's a kind of richness that I think develops because of all that. Back to some monotypes, and they are strange to look at here because these are 11 inches by 30 inches, and they're really pretty small. And this was a reaction or a year and a half after spending some time in England on the coast of Cornwall to some of the landscape that I saw there. Again, the first drawings that I did when I was there were very literal drawings. And it's very frustrating to me to draw literally because it's just so much detail. But after a space of time, then I was able to simplify. And that's part of the problem I've had here, because I'm here for only 10 days or so, or 12 days, and trying to deal with the tremendous amount of detail around us and make some prints that respond to it. Back to paintings again. And more the paint in the last year or so has become laid down in glazes, that is real thin layers. That's an old traditional method. And I'm using it because there's a sense of transparency and depth and a glow to the color that develops. The first paintings that I showed you had a lot of texture of thick paint being applied. And these later ones are very transparent, very thin. Reflecting pool. And as I make an image like this, I'm thinking of them as trees or sculpture. And what they are forms that I'm able to come up with while painting that are kind of intuitive. And this gets to what we were talking about earlier with communication in spiritual terms. I think it's within that kind of a form that the possibility exists, for me at least, to communicate in that way.
You know, several times you've mentioned that you think of these things as trees. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to know why it's important for you to think of them as trees.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the idea of growing, and that is a positive kind of life force thing. But I also say that sometimes when I'm talking about them to help people who look at these things and can't figure them out. This one really is hard to see as a tree. It's pretty much a stretch. Yes.
Going back to the spiritual part, you know, maybe this is inappropriate to give this input, but to me that could be like a ton of fire, Holy Spirit.
I've always had a hard time with symbols that stand for something real directly.
So maybe that's too...
I would naturally kind of shy away. I can see how you may interpret it that way. But when, for example,
I judged a mural project for the city of Minneapolis. I was on the panel for this, and they were going to do murals on the side of grain elevators in Hiawatha Avenue, Minneapolis. Gigantic scene. And three of the four finalists had huge, bright red primary color images with all kinds of symbolism, you know, that you'd have to kind of have a chart to, you could, it doesn't really mean as much to people, I think. I mean, you can look at it and you could see things that you could recognize and think that must stand for the railroad industry and, or the logging industry, but to me a symbol is much more important if it's sort of felt and not not necessarily having a name to it, that, and not being so
it's kind of an eye for the whole
thing. Obvious. Yeah. Okay. Well, the images kind of evolve, and your question really, Peter, about do I need to call them trees, there's probably a process of the subject changing and evolving, and it may have some different identity as it goes on. It's a real easy for me to say something is an image of a sculpture, because that it could be anything. But what I think I would like to see them also suggest is the human figure. And this painting of the recent work probably comes as closer than any of them to doing that. There's something about this that to me suggests the human figure without drawing a human figure in detail. I think that things get better for me when they get more simple. And this is the last painting that I'm showing. It's also just about the last painting that I've done. But it has that kind of simplicity that I hope for. And that form in the middle may be a tree, it may stand for something, it could be a flame. It seems to be reflected. I make things partly because I think they'll be interesting to look at and beautiful to look at. But I'd like them to suggest something as well. And a kind of life force, a kind of positiveness, and, you know, I'm now making compositions with something in the center, which was just like what I did for a dozen years when I was drawing the human figure. That was right down the middle of the composition. So that's where it seems to be going. I'm here at Holden, and in addition to teaching the classes, I'm trying to work on a group of little monotypes that react to this place. And it's overwhelming to look around this mountain, especially if you're from Minnesota, and try to come to terms with it. You know, I can't even take a picture of it. You know, you have to get way further back to take a picture. So, but what I've the closest I've gotten so far is to try to abstract, give it a little print that has a sense of verticality to it, and also drawing into it that might suggest, if I'm successful, a waterfall. That's what I'm working on here. Are there any other questions which you might have, or yes?
We were working in the lapidary shop, and so many of your things look like they, you know, it could be pieces of stone.
Really? That's a nice idea. I haven't thought about that.
Yeah. Do you name your pictures, or do you stay away from realities or just number them?
I name them. And I have a real hard time naming it. It's the hardest thing. I would contract out for that if I could. That'd be terribly hard. So one way to simplify that is to have series. Like there were a series, when I hit on the word arboretum about those trees, then there's arboretum number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm trying to think of recent titles. But arboretum is one, sculpture garden is another. Garden pool, that's another one.
Temple.
Yes. Yes, thank you, Anna.
Mm-hmm. What do you do in your classes?
Classes here?
Mm-hmm.
There's some people here who have done that. We're making little prints, we start with a process that's very fast and direct. Inking a surface and putting paper down on it with no image on it and drawing it on the back, drawing the image, and when you peel it away, you've got an image. And some people have gotten beyond that point to stencil printing we're doing. People have been really enjoying it. There's been a lot of fun things, and they're up in the dining hall, if you can see them.
Given the historical aspect that you brought in the first place, which you said art reflects the society that mm-hmm. we live in, you have such bold colors. Is that a statement of the society we live in?
Well, it may be hard for me to actually identify how I'm doing that reflecting. I use these colors, or have used them, because I found that I like them, and there's sort of a challenge each time of making colors do something that I haven't made them do before. So that I think artists often work on different projects at the same time. They may be working on expressing an idea, but then there's also a technical thing having to do with paint. And I studied, when I was in graduate school, I was really interested in the work of Josef Albers, who was a complete abstract painter, but had to do with the interaction of color and what happens when you unusual combinations of color occur. Artists like Paul Klee is somebody who's also very influential to me. And I don't know quite how I might reflect society, except possibly I reflect in the midst of all this change and all the upheaval of this century, I am amongst those of us who are trying to look for something solid to hold on to, too. And, there's a lot of political art, people who make art that has a lot of political and social statement these days. And I can respect it, but it's not something I can do myself. I'm as interested, perhaps, as they are in those issues, but I can't do that. It doesn't interest me.
There's a certain strength to it, as mm-hmm. well. My reaction.
Uh-huh.
It's a strong statement, uh-huh. is what I thought.
Yeah. Thank you.
Do you have prints of your paintings?
No, we the gallery has made a couple, but not in any. Every now and then we might do a print. I have a postcard of a painting, and then one of these that I showed here is also in a card form. Yes.
The Minneapolis mural project. Mm-hmm. The one that wasn't so symbolic,
Yeah, I was very happy. I knew there were four finalists, and the first three came in, and I was really hoping the fourth would be different, and it was. It was a real subtle project in which these grain elevators will be painted this summer. I think right now they should be. In a way that kind of reflects, there's the light that falls on it right now and the shadows. Like there will be lines from power lines. It's hard to describe, but it's very subtle. And the panel, when they first saw that, thought it was too subtle. But when they realized that this thing is going to be gigantic, then it seemed to make sense. So that, you can, if you're in Minnesota, you can watch for that. Developing one.
Is it difficult to transpose a smaller painting into a larger painting?
Yeah, I think it really is. And I don't know how I would ever do that. Public work murals often are just too heavy-handed usually. It's just too much.
Was your first slide a painting or?
That was a painting.
There is no print of that.
No, no.
Is it salt? The painting?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You mentioned Klee. Who's of historical artists or even architects? Mm-hmm. Whose work do you acknowledge as being influential in what you do?
excuse me, in terms of color, I think Matisse. excuse me. And Josef Albers and Paul Klee, Max Beckmann. And that's something you probably couldn't see by looking at these paintings, but if you looked at the drawings, which I did all those years, there's kind of, if you're familiar with that artist, that kind of expression. Milton Avery, somebody I admire greatly. I don't know, don't think the work shows that much, although maybe the monotypes do.
Did you show some of the early ones that were more architectural, that were more like town squares?
Mm-hmm.
Especially the one I kept thinking of, the Chirico.
Okay.
You know, except without the figures, or without even less.
Right.
And some of these later ones that seem so solid, abstract forms that have a real sense of three-dimensionality, that I think of some of the other early surrealistic painters that sort of created landscapes, three-dimensional landscapes of abstract objects.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, Chirico was an artist that I was real impressed with when I was young, too. And there's, I think I got from people like that, or Chirico specifically, a sense of simplification and monumentality, making things that are, look real big and kind of stocky. And waiting. Well, you've been very good. This has been a late hour for a session. That's been very kind. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
All right.